All right, as promised, with us today is Amador County Health Officer, Dr. Rita Kerr. Dr. Kerr, thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
And welcome. So we have the latest update from the health department released yesterday. 1,683 test results have come in to the county. We have 12 confirmed cases. We have those two that are currently hot right now. Do you like that number, the 1,683?
That number has been getting better and better, especially since we got the site, the mobile testing site up at St. Catherine Drexel.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is a state-supported site. We share that unit with Yosemite Valley and Bear Valley, so it's not up here every day.
Gotcha.
In fact, I want to, before I forget to mention it, mention that the group who runs the site is going to be doing training on Friday, so the site will not be open this Friday, tomorrow.
Okay.
It will be back next week, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday in Amador County, and the Kirkwood site next Thursday.
Wow, doing one in Kirkwood even.
Yes, that one's wow. Alpine Amador County shared site.
Gotcha.
Every other Thursday.
So one of these two is hospitalized, the 40-year-old man.
The one in his 40s, yes.
And the 50-year-old is in isolation. They were connected to each other.
Yes, they somehow had close contact, and so one likely infected the other.
Mm-hmm. You know, we've talked about that here at the station. There are at one time, well, JD and I are here together. Here, he and I are family members. Jake and I and JD are family members. Joey, we're all family. But we do have other people that work here. MC, we're all family. But Matt Reby comes in. Mike comes in. If one of us were to test positive, would we all be quarantined? Would we all? How does that work? Because a lot of people are asking that. Oh, no. One person in my office tested positive. Are we all going down? Or?
We evaluate each individual to find out the proximity, how close that person was to the person who was infectious.
Mm-hmm.
We found out how much time they spent within that close proximity. So it's a matter of close distance and time, which kind of determines the dose. Mm-hmm. And the mm-hmm. formula that we use is within a 6-foot distance for at least 10 to 15 minutes.
Sure.
And the longer, the more potential exposure. Wearing face coverings, especially if both people have them on, mm-hmm. is the safest, especially if you can't maintain that 6-foot physical distancing. The other thing I would recommend, although this isn't the major way coronavirus is spread, is that surfaces like this countertop,
yes.
If someone's been on the microphone and speaking especially without a face covering, those droplets can fall within that 6-foot distance onto a surface. And then if you touch that surface with your hand and touch your face with unwashed hands, you can introduce the virus into the eyes, nose, or mouth and get it into your system that way. That's why the hand washing and the hand sanitizer is so important,
sure.
And also cleaning the frequently touched surfaces.
So just like with any other virus like this, it has to get into your system, introduced through mouth, nose, eyes.
Yes, as a respiratory virus, that's the way it gets in.
So if droplets were to land on my arm,
you can wash those off. It's not going to penetrate through your skin.
Through the skin. Okay, great. We're going to get back to masks because we've had a few questions about that in just a bit.
Okay.
I just wanted to get back to this. So 10 recovered to date. We still have two out.
Two in isolation.
Yeah. Can you tell us about the case that's hospitalized? Is he serious? Is he on a ventilator?
Not on a ventilator, stable, and getting close to being able to finish isolation as an outpatient.
Okay, great. Because we're all fear. You know, when this first happened, there was, especially in New York, there was ventilators. Everybody's on a ventilator. Where you don't, if you go on a ventilator, you hardly come out. It's almost a death sentence, so forth and so on. So we always like to know that. And again, we'll do a HIPAA, and we won't talk anymore about those two. Do you get these every single day? Do you get the results back? And
the positives, by law, have to be called to us the same day by the provider that ordered it and receives the results.
Okay.
The negatives will float in electronically, and then we just keep tabs of how many results we've received.
So now I want to go and talk a little bit about in the release yesterday, you have mentioned creating a social bubble.
Yes, okay. I introduced this concept, I believe, at the last Board of Supervisors meeting. Some people call it a little something different. They'll call it a squad or a quarantine, T-E-A-M. The concept is that as things are reopening and more activities are being allowed, individuals, especially those who are higher risk, need to have good information to make good decisions for themselves about what they should decide to do or not to do. So this concept of choosing a group of people, a relatively small group of people that you pretty much exclusively interact with on a social basis for a period of time,
sure,
is just, you know, one more layer of protection to lower the risk. It, again, it's not zero risk, but it's a more manageable number of people that if one of them gets sick can say, okay, this is my group that I've been with on a regular basis. Even within that social bubble, it's still recommended that physical distancing, hand washing, wearing face coverings, outdoors is safer than indoors. Those things are all still recommended. But I'm thinking about the fact that two families with similar age children may say, you know, we as families are going to exclusively get together for our kids to have play dates. Or there may be a small group of people that wants to get together for the purpose of sewing or playing cards or something like that. And that becomes your sort of your social structure and your social support. It's been really challenging over 3 months to really be isolated and physically distanced. I have friends on the East Coast who haven't left their neighborhood for 3 months. And those, of course, urban areas where there's a lot more activity. I'm looking for a good infographic to communicate this with pictures, and going to reach out to a couple other areas that have created some of those materials and ask permission to adapt and use those materials.
Let me just play the devil's advocate here, Dr. Kerr. So what's the difference in this as opposed to you coming here and wearing a mask, and we're socializing right now with each other? What's the difference? Why do it now? You know, and because one of the things you say here is don't cheat on your fellow bubble buddies here.
right.
You know, only stay
so
with who you're.
So it's true that people who are out working and having frequent contact with the public, all those are risk events. And really, the duration I'm going to be in here is a total of 20 minutes.
Right.
We're wearing masks. We're staying distant. So this is really a pretty low-risk encounter. I'm really talking about somebody who is trying to decide whether or not to even visit their grandkids. And that's another one. A grandparent, grandchildren can create a social bubble and start to have careful contact with one another again. That's if those grandkids haven't been going out to play dates and daycare and places that would put them at higher risk. So it's kind of think about this sort of exclusivity or a informal social contract to try and keep each other safe if you decide to socialize together.
We're talking with Amador County Health Officer Dr. Rita Kerr today on creating a social bubble. This is available on our Facebook page, and it'll be on the county website as well. Give you some little guidelines on this. Dr. Kerr, I went to a business lunch yesterday afternoon. We were required to wear masks. They took our temperature when we went into the building. And we then went to the restaurant, and we were social distanced. They had QR code readers for us to actually get the menus with our phones. Got
That's
it that
neat.
Way. So forth and so on. We sat down. Everybody takes their masks off, and we start talking. There was five of us at a table. And I started thinking to myself, well, I'm eating. I've got to be excluding something. Everybody here, how are we going to stay safe? What what I'm saying?
The point is, all the things leading up to the point where you get your food and you're served, then you obviously have to take the mask off to eat.
Right.
But I think you do all the right things before then, and then you wash your hands afterward, put your mask back on, and you go on. And you minimize the time that you're not protected by that extra layer.
They actually did have hand sanitizers after we got done eating.
Great.
Too. So you're going to have more information on creating a social bubble. And that'll be available, again, I said, on the county's website for you to go
yes.
to and find out more about that. A question came up. A couple of people, J.D. took one this morning, asking gloves, the glove issue. You still see people. I went to the store yesterday, and I saw a gentleman with a mask on, had glasses on, safety glasses, and snow gloves. And I said, I don't think this is not.
That is not is necessary. Not. The gloves are really intended for when you are having to handle things that multiple other people have touched, especially when you're cleaning and sanitizing them, mm-hmm. to just provide an extra layer. Also to protect you from the cleaning chemicals,
sure.
because some of them can irritate the skin. But yeah. then as soon as you're done that cleaning, you want to take those gloves off and wash your hands again. As I've said before, really the only time I would wear gloves is if I'm providing direct care or obtaining a sample from someone, and then I would take them off and perform hand hygiene. The other place I wear them is at the gas pump, just because I don't want to get either gasoline or germs on my hands. I take them off before I even get back in my car.
Yep.
And before I even touch the door handle of my car, and then I have my little pump bottle of hand sanitizer inside the door.
I was talking to somebody yesterday about that, and I said, Our health officer says, you know, wear gloves at the gas pump. But I never thought about it before. But you should actually protect your hands, too, from
right.
the petroleum products.
And if you don't
so
have
forth.
Them, just clean. Hand sanitize right afterwards. Yeah.
Well, like you know, said, we don't realize it that a lot of people.
Before you touch your steering wheel or your handle, because otherwise you've just cross-contaminated all your own frequently touched surfaces.
Yeah. You know what? This is creating a new normal for me because I started thinking about it. I hand sanitize every time I go somewhere, and I'm thinking, why don't I just do this forever? There's no reason not to do this. You know what I mean? Going forward, I'm gonna
again,
sanitize.
I'll go back to, and we talked about this over lunch too. This is something that we should have been doing years ago, if not forever. Why do we go to a restaurant, and why does there have to be a sign that says all employees must wash hands before returning to the floor? No fooling. Don't you think that common courtesy that everybody should wash their hands?
That should be the expectation. It's hard to change behavior. People form habits, and people have done things a certain way for so long. I was just thinking about the fact driving here that I started wearing a face covering at the end of April. So it's been almost 2 months, and it takes a good 6 weeks to change a habit and form a habit. And now I don't have to think twice about, did I bring my face covering with me when I leave the house in the morning? It's just there. I have it. I'm ready to wear it.
So let me get to that. So to the face covering, I was asked yesterday to ask you about this. So there seems to be what's forming now, another divide in our country, as if we're not already divided amongst other things. Now it's the mask, the maskers and the non-maskers, and each try to intimidate and each other. So let's say I am not wearing a mask now, folks. JD is wearing a mask. Dr. Kurz is wearing a mask. So the rule has always been that you've told us you're wearing the mask to protect you from me, not me from you. So I don't have a mask on, so I'm not protecting you from me.
That's true.
But you have a face covering on, and I would hope that my droplets would not penetrate your mask, your cloth, and get to you. So if that's true, why do I need to wear a mask if everybody around me is wearing? Why do I not need to? You know, why do I need to wear a mask when everyone around me is wearing a mask? Can I go without a mask? And are we all still protected?
In order for there to be enough level of protection for mask wearing, we need a majority of the population to use the face coverings whenever they're mixing in public with others, especially when you're within that 6 foot distance. But think about the fact that every time you breathe out, cough, sneeze, laugh, sing, or even talk, respiratory droplets are leaving your body and they're getting into the air and they're landing on surfaces. And so in order to keep the transmission low and keep our community open so we don't backslide, We need to have the majority of people wearing a face covering when they're out in public.
Mm-hmm.
When you're in your car alone, you do not need to wear a mask. When you are in your house with your usual household members, you do not need to wear a mask. For people who work in a private office that don't interact with the public, they don't need to have a mask on when they're in their private office, mm-hmm. not interacting mm-hmm. with the public. If somebody comes in to see them, they should mask up.
Yeah, yeah. It gets me, it happens still when you run into people. I was walking down the street the other day, and there was a couple. I didn't have a mask on because I was leaving here, going right across the street to see those guys and come back. And they kind of like walked to the side of me to kind of get around me. And I was like, hey, I don't have the plague, folks.
Well, maybe
to them I do.
A casual pass-by like that
yeah.
normally would not be a risk transmission. But I think people are becoming more aware of the personal space
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
keeping the distance
yeah.
whenever there's the opportunity to do so. It certainly doesn't hurt to pass by
sure.
at a wider
sure.
distance than actually close contact in a pass-by.
So the mask is, even though you're wearing the mask to protect me from you, I'm not wearing a mask to protect you from me. You're still not protected from me by you wearing your mask. But you and I had this conversation.
I'm not absolutely protected, but I'm relatively protected.
Yes, but you
it's
have openings.
Because I don't have a tightly fitted respirator
right.
mask on, so there is still outside air sneaking in around the sides of my
mm-hmm.
mask.
Mm-hmm.
However, if there was virus floating in this air, I would be inhaling a lot less of it through this mask
sure.
than I would be if I wasn't wearing any face covering at all. So there's
right.
relative protection. It's just not absolute protection.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
And good ventilation as well. We try to run fans, you know, and
run
everything.
Run fans,
yeah,
open doors and windows, absolutely circulating
yeah.
the air in an enclosed space definitely helps. But again, outdoors is safer
and also,
than indoors.
Check your air conditioning vents. A lot of people, you know, change your vents, make sure that they're
recirculating.
They're yeah.
And then if you have the opportunity to HEPA filter, not
yeah.
everybody's got in healthcare settings, generally they're converting rooms into HEPA filter rooms, and that
yeah.
helps as well.
You know, Dr. Kerr,
do we have a call?
No, that was...
Was that a question? Okay.
Yeah, but I got a question on this face mask. This isn't...
That's a surgical mask, a simple ear loop mask.
Is it covering enough of my face? Because my other one, the one that Dr. Bob gave me,
uh-huh.
gave me a few of them, and they feel like they cover me better. This one feels a little...
Well, as long as the openings of your nose and mouth are covered,
mm-hmm.
it's adequate.
Okay.
So, okay, back to the mask again. When you see someone wearing, and you see it all the time, especially in restaurants and stores, the workers, they'll have the mask down
under their nose.
Under
right.
their nose.
Right.
Or it'll be down where their mouth,
right.
you know, at the bottom of the lip.
Then it's
lip,
lost
so
its effectiveness. It's at least covering the mouth when they speak is going to capture some,
mm-hmm.
but they're breathing everything in through their nose.
Yeah.
And potentially if they sneezed, then anything that was expelled from the nose wouldn't be captured.
So if it's covering the mouth, then you're still protecting me
well,
from
you. Well, covering
the
mouth
the
is
nose,
better than nothing, but it
yeah.
really should be covering both the mouth and nose. Otherwise, it's
so does
only partial.
So you're going to breathe in those, and again, they linger. How long do they linger in the air? I know because on
oh.
in this... In
so
this...
droplets fall pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Droplets are big. It's the aerosols that linger in the air. And
so what is a large droplet and what is a small droplet?
I would have to go through and look at all the microscopic
yeah.
size, relative sizes. But suffice it to say that aerosols linger in the air. It's one of the reasons singing is a higher risk activity than talking, because with the forced air expelling...
Yeah.
It actually produces aerosol.
I was in church on Saturday night, and Father said, you know, you can go ahead and follow along, but do it at a whisper and
to the singing
don't
or just
sing.
To the message?
No, everything.
Okay.
The more
and
forcefully
and,
you protect
yeah.
you project your voice, the more air you expel, the more potential
you know,
droplets
right.
and aerosols are being expelled.
I've seen it on the video that we do, the way they've got the people distanced, especially at the Catholic Church. But when you first told me the duration statistic, you know, duration of time and everything, I started thinking, to me, the one area in the county where people get together, large groups of people, for an hour or more is a church. And it just, to me, that seems like the most dangerous place in the community.
That's why there have been so many outbreaks linked to churches.
Okay, okay.
It is a constitutionally protected right, and that's why the nation and the state have allowed that earlier than science would otherwise support.
Okay.
But we have to be really careful in that setting. And even to the point where people in church really should be wearing face coverings, minimize the responsorial psalms and the singing,
right. Mm-hmm.
Or do them silently. Absolutely not greeting each other for the sign of peace or just a general greeting. You do that in a no-touch way. Communion should be served in a careful way, preferentially prepackaged, or at least, you know, not having someone touch the mouth. And also shortening the service if possible.
Yeah, yeah. Gotcha. So we're going to touch one more thing, Dr. Kern. I know we've got to get going here, and we've got news coming up. You have okayed the Amador Junior Livestock Committee to have their show, a live show. It's going to be a virtual auction, but a live show. So will all the kids who are showing in the ring need to wear masks? Will everyone need to wear masks? What's the...
Yes, they would. Again, I have basically reviewed the plan that was submitted,
mm-hmm.
and anticipating that, you know, fingers crossed, at the end of July, when this is slated to occur, our stability here locally and statewide would be such that the state order, which Amador remains under, would allow for that sort of smaller gathering of individuals. If it doesn't, there has to be a contingency plan, and there is, for a backup, for a virtual show. But our hope is that they've put all the measures into place in their plan,
mm-hmm.
that it would be in keeping with safer practices in a smaller gathering. And so the sort of things that they had was smaller cohorts of people, 10 or less, and then they leave right after they show, and they sanitize, and they bring in the next group.
Gotcha.
The other thing that can happen is that the animals all get brought, the judges come and judge without the actual show ring going on. That's the contingency plan.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to put you on the spot here, Dr. Kerr, because we're going to, we've been asked to video and stream the live show. So we will have one of our announcers will be, you know, here comes Rita Kerr in the ring with lot number two, her pulled Hereford. We're going to have an expert with us. We're going to have swine, lamb, and we need someone for steers. Would you volunteer to be our color commentator?
It has been years, and I don't know if I remember. I probably remember enough about it, but I don't know if I'll have time to do that. But thank you for asking.
All right. Dr. Kerr, anything else you want to get across to the folks out there?
I do want to remind people that the testing site is here usually 3 days a week. Next mm-hmm. week it will be Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. It will not be here tomorrow. It's most efficient if you log in and sign up ahead of time. If you can't do that, call the helpline, which is the 223-6676 number, and then someone will assist you. Or if you can't get a hold of them on a day the site is open, there are people on site with a computer to assist with getting you registered.
Oh, you can do it right there.
It's not preferred. It takes quite a bit longer, but it's possible.
Yeah. All right. Amador County Health Officer Dr. Rita Kerr, thank you very much for coming by and
you are welcome.
With us today. All right. It is 5 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock. We have news of the world and the nation from the ABC Radio News Network.